Hello, what's happening? Welcome to the Hopitarian Show. I am Shane.
And I'm Nico.
And we have a special guest today. We have with us Lee Enfield. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out of your day to come on with us. So just to get right to it, we mainly wanted you on because you had written a really interesting article, blog post, whatever you want to call it, over on your website, which is called N Block Press. People should go check that out. It's pretty cool. So the title of this article that you've done, I can't even speak English right, is called "Here's What I Would Do as CEO of Twitter and Why Many People Are Wrong." So just to start off, what was kind of your catalyst or and your inspiration for writing this?
Mostly just because it's kind of a fun thought experiment, and I had seen kind of a number, you know, when Elon Musk said that he was looking for a CEO, you know, that he would be stepping down, that kind of thing.
Right.
I had seen a number of higher profile personalities kind of have sharing their thoughts and a handful of threads about the same topic. This is what they would do if they were CEO of Twitter. And I don't know, a lot of it seemed like it was for the most part, like, well reasoned and maybe sort of on track, but not quite. Like, I read a thread from Blake Masters, who is excellent, who I really like what he's been doing or attempting to do out in Arizona. And it really kind of leaned heavily into talking about video and long form and different media things like this. And he was the only one who I'd seen share that take. And some of it I felt was kind of maybe a number of people were missing the point. And one of the big analogies that people throw out a lot is the idea that Twitter is like a town square. And I kind of disagree with that. I understand that people like that idea because usually that's like teeing an argument up to say that there shouldn't be censorship or that, you know, things like this. But I think it kind of misses the point of the platform itself. And so I just kind of wanted to take a stab at, putting together a couple of what my thoughts are on it and, what I would do as CEO.
Yeah, and I think your point about it being people watching actually makes a lot more sense than the town square thing. Because that's kind of basically what it is. You're talking about other people with your friends. And then, if they just happen to see it, then it turns into an argument or something.
It's kind of like, you go to a mall or some kind of public place and you're just walking around and you see people, they're just like passing you by and you'll never see them ever again. But I guess with this, because you follow people that you want to follow, so of course you're going to see them over and over again, unless you unfollow them or you block them or whatever. So there is that kind of equivalency, I guess. So we'll kind of just go over some of the points that you're alluding to. So the first one that you were talking about is just speech in general. And before Elon Musk paid and bought Twitter, the whole, like, what is allowed on Twitter was kind of, and I guess you can even argue it's still that way. It was vague. There wasn't this like pinpoint accuracy of what exactly are we allowed to say. So like in your article here, you say Twitter users should be able to post whatever they want within legal limits. There would be no TOS relating to hate speech, inclusive language, or similar abstractions. Insults, crude jokes, and offensive memes would all be fine to post. Now, something like that would be like what my definition of hate speech would be different from someone else's definition of hate speech, because, you know, a lot of people who are quote unquote woke, hate speech is just whatever they can come up with at that particular moment. But for me, I don't give a shit about hate speech. You can say whatever the fuck you want, you know? Is that kind of your feeling as well on all that?
Yeah. Especially because, I really feel like a platform, if you're going to be, like, you know, obviously the goal of the CEO of Twitter is going to be to, since it's a privately owned company now, it's not publicly traded. Now you're privately owned, so you have to become profitable, right? And so this means that you need to increase your revenue from not just corporate advertisers, but end users, independent content creators, you know, basically, you know, increasing engagement from wherever you can get it. And so you can't have this type of censorship if you're going to attract people. Like, think about, it's just bad business, right? Like, it's good for a small but powerful minority of you know, politically minded influential users, right? So like the progressive left, of course, loves, you know, these types of speech policing and this type of thing. But this isn't really, like, most of the censorship that was taking place on Twitter obviously involved politics, right? Like, it wasn't like you had like sports Twitter and finance Twitter, you know, getting randomly banned for miscellaneous unnamed violations. This right. was basically only affecting politics and like culture. And so, you know, you would have to start from the understanding that, hey, listen, if you're on Twitter, you can say, you know, whatever you want to within, you know, the you know, the legal limit, like I said. You know, conversely, end users would have, you know, better tools for moderating what they see and what type of content they interact with and what type of users are allowed to interact with them. Because, and again, you know, I kind of wrote this from the perspective of how I would approach this as the chief executive of the company, not how Lee would like to see his Twitter feed look. Right. So, you know, this is meant to be not purely influenced by my own political preference, but by like an earnest look at what I think you would do if you were serious about growing the company. And so there are sects, there are groups of people who don't like the idea of free speech, and they can, you know, go into their own little corners of, you know, progressive Twitter and, you know, criticize each other and report each other all day. But what they can't do is go into, you know, our circles, adjacent circles, things like this, and start ruining everyone else's time. Because like I said, that's bad business. So you should start from the understanding that as long as what you're saying is not already illegal in the US, you should be able to say it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily should thrive or that people should have to see it, but you should be able to post what you want to. Because I think that's the only way, if you're going to gain trust from, you know, a broad base of users, this is probably the only way to do it.
So you're talking about like things that are legal in the US. How would you account for around the world? Because the rules there for free speech, like Canada, for example, is just completely ridiculous compared to America. So how would you kind of keep that accountable?
Yeah. So I probably wouldn't, to be honest. You know, if like, I kind of think of it this way, if America is going to be like this, the big shiny city on the hill, we shouldn't concern ourselves with what second rate countries like Canada, have to think, right? Like,
yeah.
If Canadian users are serious about seeing what's going on in the world, I mean, America, in a lot of ways, America defines culture globally, right? I mean, Western influence is in every corner of the globe. And so I would not concern myself with compliance with, you know, speech laws of countries that kind of like aren't serious. You know what I mean? Twitter's a U.S. company. It's going to abide by U.S. laws because it has to, because it's a, you know, legitimate corporation in the United States. But I don't think that I would spend a lot of time. It seems like a bad use of time and a bad use of money to spend a lot of effort learning the ins and outs of the legal system in every second and third rate market that there is. I, you know, probably wouldn't basically care, you know, and people might say, oh, well, there's some money that could come from, you know, Canadian users, and there's some money that could come from whatever, people in Saudi Arabia and you know, China and, you know, whatever. But it's not realistic to do that from like a finance standpoint, from a compliance standpoint. You know, Twitter is an American company. And so it's, you know, going to be concerned with the laws in America. And if you live in a country that doesn't have free speech, frankly, you have bigger problems and access to Twitter. And that's, you know, unfortunately, just kind of how it is. That, you know, it doesn't, you know, bring me joy that Canada has descended into like this weird dystopian, really, you know, really polite hellscape. But, you know, it is what it is. Like, if I'm the CEO of Twitter, there's nothing that I can really do about that other than make the site accessible to any users who try to reach it. But, you know, I would not change any Twitter policies or invest any real effort with complying with the laws of other countries.
So to kind of sidestep, we've mentioned Elon Musk taking over for owning Twitter and being the CEO, or I guess stepping down or whatever his title is. He's the owner of Twitter as of now.
So is he not the CEO? I'm confused.
Well, yeah, he said that he's going to step down, but he's going to wait to bring in someone. There's rumors that he already has someone that's going to take over, but they're just kind of waiting on the right. I don't know.
Right. So he would continue to own Twitter. Right. But he's basically said that he would outsource the day-to-day operations to a CEO. So whereas in a normal corporate structure, you might have a CEO that reports to a board of directors, you'd have a CEO that reports to an owner, Elon Musk.
That's probably a good idea for him, because I feel like he's doing way too many things.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that 100%, actually.
So as of right now, since he's been the owner of Twitter, what would you say are some of the things that he's done well and some of the things that it's like he needs to improve upon?
Yeah. So I think that he's done well as far as the Twitter files thing goes. I think it was a good idea to kind of release those as a series. And I think it was a good idea to air that out, because, you know, everyone looks at these and a lot of people say, okay, well, this is, you know, this is no big deal. Who cares? Everybody already knew that, you know, the White House was, you know, getting accounts suspended and that the FBI was already tracking, you know, what was going on and this type of thing. But I think there is some political utility to the fact that, you know, it's basically it's in the public domain at this point. Like, these are, you know, what is being released to the public is basically screenshots and firsthand accounts of these things actually happening. So there's no question. This takes a lot of what some people would call like conspiracy theories and misinformation and turns it into just facts that people will have to contend with. There are a lot of people who say, okay, you know, no, this is still, it's a conspiracy, or this is you know, they do the thing where it's like, well, it's not happening. Okay, well, maybe it is happening, but it's good that it's happening. That whole like leftist progression. But, you know, I agree with airing this stuff out there and just making it indisputable, because it can't be swept under the rug as just, oh, hey, you have no proof this is happening. So, I mean, I agree with his action there, but I think he's been you know, from a critical standpoint, I think he's been way too visible, and I think he's been way too indecisive, right? He's like done a lot without actually getting much done, if that makes sense. Like, he's always on the timeline, he's always tweeting, he's always engaging in like trolling, and that's fine. I love doing that. If anybody follows my Twitter account, that's what 90% of what my posts are. But I'm also I do that in my free time because I think it's funny. It's not like, you know, my main job. So if you're the CEO, like, I think he's alienating a lot of people. It comes off as reckless and it comes off as indecisive. It looks, it violates that concept of like, hey, you should act like you've been there before. You know what I mean? He seems to really be enjoying the idea that he has like, you know, master admin privileges on this giant website. Yeah. And that's not something that you saw a lot out of like Jack Dorsey. And, you know, I think he's been too much to the fore. Like, he should be spend less time alienating advertisers, less time trolling AOC, and, you know, more time actually fixing some of these things. Because there has been a handful of usability issues. Like, the site, it's been a couple times where, you know, the actual functionality of the product itself has suffered. And, you know, that's not a good look. If you're going to go in and fire thousands of people and kind of make a joke about it, about look at all these useless employees, and then like a week later, people are having trouble posting, or like the timeline's not working right, or you can't upload images, or, you know, there's weird suspensions still going on and this type of thing. It doesn't look great. It doesn't build a lot of credibility. It just makes you look reckless and imprecise. And I think those are bad things.
Yeah, I think when, like you're talking about him firing all those people, I think he should have maybe not fired as many people, or at least
not all the same time.
Yeah, have something ready to kind of like fill in, you know, like ready to just act, yeah, like, you know, to keep the ball rolling, as you were.
Yeah, and it's a very the tone of it was very much like a punch down, which, mm-hmm. you know, everyone, I mean, we all saw, like, there's a bunch of, like, you know, useless blue hair, like, you know, diversity specialists whose yeah. jobs aren't really important, right? Like, however, and I don't like those people, and I think there's too many of them in society, and, you know, it's a whole separate concept. But the reality is that most of these people were not decision makers. Most of these people, you know, these are people who applied for a job and the job was for them. And I don't really like those people, but it's not like, they didn't start paying themselves that money, right? Like, Twitter, through its, you know, previous leadership had made the decision to hire that person and say, okay, this is going to be your livelihood. Even though the job's a joke, this is going to be your livelihood, right? You're going to be able to pay your rent by coming to work for 4 hours a week and drinking a freaking Jamba Juice smoothie yeah. and having a goofy looking haircut and, you know, whatever. So, like, of course, from an executive standpoint, it makes sense to get rid of those people. And I'm not necessarily saying that it was a wrong decision, but I'm saying that, you know, you shouldn't like kind of publicly gloat about it and make it like this gleeful thing if you're the executive, right? Like I don't mean that for, you know, social commentary, like all, you know, if you're just want to go on Twitter and say, ha ha, like look at this weirdo, they got fired. Well, okay, you know, whatever. But if you're running the company, I don't think it sets the right tone to kind of just kind of, you know, be kind of laughing while you're firing people in mass, right? Especially if, like I said, the product is going to go on to kind of be a little rocky and kind of suffer. Like, you're not going to create much goodwill, and it makes it more difficult to, I mean, almost be taken seriously when you treat stuff that way.
And to go back to your point about what he's done well when regarding the Twitter files, I think him giving those Twitter files to journalists that look more plausible, I guess, for lack of a better term, than say, for example, he gave it to some, you know, someone on like Breitbart or something like that, because then that automatically gives the impression that, well, I mean, you know, there's obviously some kind of, I mean, there obviously is a political agenda there, but when you give it to some platform like Breitbart, that already gives that, that, like, I don't know what the word is, but it already gives that impression that what we're trying to tell you is what, because like you were saying before too, a lot of people knew about all this stuff already, but now that's out in the open, it's not a conspiracy theory, it's not some joke or a lie or whatever, but it also it gives it more credence. So he'll give it to someone like a Matt Taibbi or Barry Weiss, or I believe his name was like Schellenberger, like just these, like, of these journalists that, you know, and regardless of you agree with them 100% on everything, that's not really the point. The point is that he's not giving it to someone like, oh, we're going to give it to someone from MSNBC writer to have them do it if they're willing to give it out or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 100%. You know, I think that, I've thought a little bit about his decision to like hand this stuff off to, like you said, Matt Taibbi or Barry Weiss and these types of people. And I agree with him releasing it. And I understand the need to, you have to kind of off ramp this through journalists, because it looks bad if you're the new boss and you say, hey, I'm just going to publish everybody's old emails. You know, I think that would have been a faux pas. So I do agree with his decision to off ramp this through a third party. But I just hate to see it, you know, go to people like Barry Weiss or you know,
right? Yeah,
because most of this stuff, like the like I think Musk's, to an extent, one of his flaws has been that he kind of oscillates, and you don't know. You know, some days he's just going full on like high visibility trolling. And then some days he tries to be like this almost IDW, like centrist classical liberal guy who talks about, you know, we need free speech and there can't be too much bias and we need honest journalism and this type of thing. And it's almost in a way you know, it almost seems like he's just like outgunned conceptually by this stuff. I mean, there is no, you know, this is done. Like, we're in a post-truth society. There's not going to be, you know, this platonic ideal of a journalist who's just going to be like right down the center over the plate, just telling it like it is, because there's no huge market for that. And the people like Barry Weiss, and the whole IDW thing at this point, I mean, this is the alt left. Like, this is everyone who says, you know, I'm not on the left, or I'm not, you know, this is for people who think that like they vote independent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nice. And so it's frustrating to see him hand the stuff to Barry Weiss and seem to earnestly believe that he's doing like a service to the concept of like journalistic integrity or something like that, because we're kind of past that point. I mean, it's been confirmed, you know, in the last couple of weeks that basically everything going on or not going on Twitter was decided by the FBI and the CIA or the Pentagon or UC Berkeley grads. So, you know, you're not going to, like, if your goal is to get rid of that arrangement, you're not going to do it by, like, you know, calling Barry Weiss up from the minor leagues. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to happen. You have to destroy the whole thing. You know, you've got a massive global complex of weird freaks with unlimited power. And so calling up like a guy who used to contribute to Rolling Stone and be like, all right, man, I need you to set the record straight is, this is what I mean when I say he's outgunned. I mean, it's a silly move. If your goal is to, you know, posture yourself as someone who's trying to dismantle this system, which he kind of flirts with sometimes, but you know, I don't know if that's just for engagement or clicks or something, or if he genuinely believes that just shedding some light on this will somehow change it. You know, so I don't know. Maybe the guy's just handing it off because he's, you know, gone down like done 10 years worth of blackpilling in the last, you know, 4 weeks or something. Yeah, like yeah. That.
I don't know. Maybe that was a little bit of being a little naive on that. But I guess what I was trying to say is that, like you were saying, it wasn't just Elon Musk being like, all right, here's all the Twitter files. I'll tweet them because I have millions of followers. If I give it to these journalists, at least more people will kind of give it a little bit more of a relevancy. They'll take it more seriously, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, like you said, with Barry Weiss, I mean, yeah, she, you know, I don't know. Like I was saying before, like you don't have to agree with her 100%. I certainly don't. I guess what I was just trying to say is that if he is going to be branching it out, I think one thing about this to go off on that is if he gave part one to Matt Taibbi and then part two to Barry, I think he should have just given it to different people instead of just, all right, Matt Taibbi's going to have one and part three and then maybe part six. And then Barry Weiss is going to have part two and part four. And then we're going to have this person with part five. And I don't know. I don't know. I think it would have been better, in my opinion, if you had given, you're going to get part one and then you're going to get part two and then this person part three, you know, like a different person for each part.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, I think the better move would have been, and this is, you know, my opinion, you know, if I'm the CEO and I step in and I see this, you know, I would probably call up Rachel Maddow and say, here's the thing. You know, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to send you, you know, a slide deck and a written statement, and you're going to review it exactly like this on your show. Or I'm going to remove MSNBC and every MSNBC contributor from Twitter. And I probably would have said the same thing to every major network, and I would have given each major network a crack at this, because, you know, you've seen Elon Musk say, like, why isn't the media covering this? You know, nobody, you know, you've seen it. I think it was about immigration where there was something about immigration numbers, and he replied, you know, why isn't this bigger news or something to that effect? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he should understand that now I don't want to conflate, you know, and speculate what his goals are versus what mine might be if I were the CEO. So you have to, if his goal is to make Twitter like the place where people go for their information, right? And this is, I believe I've seen him say this, that he wants Twitter to be people's like source of news, you know, point blank. He seems to have like an inverted understanding of what that relationship should look like, right? Like think about what we've seen with the Twitter files. We saw the Biden White House they would just email Twitter and say, hey, just get rid of this person, get rid of this tweet. You know what I mean? There was no like,
yeah,
hey, if you care about your policies or like unbiased application of stuff, you know, you should do this. It was just like, hey, just do this because I run stuff here. Hmm. You know what I mean? So if you're the CEO, you know, I would say, hey, look, you know, MSNBC, you're going to publish this, and this is the statement that you're going to read with it. And after that, however you editorialize it, you know, that's your business. But I'm going to let you know that if you're going to be, you know, this is the misinformation policy now. I tell you what to say, and you say it. And then after that, you know, you can add whatever spin you want to it onto it. But the legacy media is legacy media. Like they need to be told what to do. This is a virtually irrelevant, or it should be irrelevant, media stream at this point. I mean, you have podcasts that do, you know, 2-3 times the numbers of the most popular cable news hosts out there. Like, I mean, Joe Rogan has, you know, a much bigger reach than anyone on cable news.
Yeah.
You have, you know, Twitch streamers, YouTube channels, podcasters that get more views and more engagement and that are more influential than these legacy media outlets. And so rather than handing the stuff off to you know, Barry Weiss or Matt Taibbi or whoever, I would hand it to the legacy media and say, look, if you still want to be relevant, because if you know, this is what you're going to do, and this is how this relationship is going to be, because you guys have made yourselves irrelevant through your constant dishonesty and deliberate deceit and, you know, actual misinformation that you feed, you know, your viewers and the American public. And so this is over now. I'm either going to put a nail in your coffin or I'm going to keep you guys going for another 20 years, but the choice is yours. That's how I would have approached it instead of handing it to, you know, Barry Weiss or somebody like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting concept. And it's also, an interesting tactic, because he could have done that. He could have been like, part one, I'll give it to like Tucker Carlson or whoever. If Tucker doesn't want it, then I'll give it to someone at CNN. If they don't want to do it, then I'll give it to someone at MSNBC. If they don't want it, then fuck you guys. And that was your chance. And I'll just be like, hey, Joe Rogan, I've been on your show a couple of times. You want to talk about the Twitter files for an episode? I'll come on and we'll talk about it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Instead of handing this to Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss, he could have handed this to Joe Rogan and, like, you know, so, like Vouch or some scumbag like that, right?
Yeah.
And had probably, like, you know, a bigger impact. You know what I mean? Because I feel like perhaps the situation was misjudged, and maybe he was laboring under the impression that if you showed a bunch of people on the left what the left had been up to behind the scenes, that they would like recoil in horror. And the reality is that's why people vote for people like the Biden administration, right? Like most people, your liberal professors, your wine moms, all this stuff, they don't vote for Joe Biden because, you know, they just think he's like the sharpest guy ever. They vote for him because they know, and they would be happy to find out about the fact that this stuff is being censored behind the scenes. Like, you have seen virtually no one say, wow, I had no idea that the FBI was removing right-wing Twitter accounts for making jokes. I'm really upset about this. No. And in fact, you've seen a lot of people say, yeah, what's the big deal? Who cares? This is what they should be doing. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think he may have misjudged it as this thing where just because what was going on is horrible and I disagree with it and I think it's a bad way to run a country, I think he saw it and was like, holy shit, this is really bad. You know, these guys are going to flip when they realize what their elected officials are doing, when in reality, they couldn't be happier. So, you know, that I think there's a little bit of a miscalculation there.
So going back to your article, and we kind of alluded to as well about like politicians and saying here that they should never be banned from Twitter. And that goes for political candidates and general officers in the military. And I really like how, and now I'm basically just praising you while you're on here, by your article here, where, you know, it's like, oh, Donald Trump, his Twitter account's going to have like a GOP thing on his account to let you know, oh yeah, he's affiliated with the GOP. I mean, people probably already know that anyway, but just having that there, they don't have to be like, is this person with the Republican or Democrat? It'll just be right there. So I like that kind of thing. And then, and if they don't want to see them, then yeah, they can be like, well, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see anything with GOP. Then boom, there right. you go.
Yeah. Cause I think, you know, there are people, you know, there are people who, you know, they just go on Twitter and they put the little, vaccine icon in their username. And, you know, they just want to see tweets from AOC and, you know, Democrats and stuff like that. And, yeah, that's fine. Those people are customers too. You know what I mean? They're going to see ads. They're going to buy products. They're going to pay for Twitter Blue. They're going to listen to podcasts just like anyone else using the platform, right? And again, this is as the CEO, not as, you know, my personal preference. you know, at a personal level, I have no use for these people because I don't find them interesting. But, you know, if I'm the CEO and I've got dog mom Deborah out in Colorado who likes getting vaccinated and hiking around with a mask on and smoking weed and voting blue no matter who, and she doesn't want to see any tweets from Donald Trump, that's fine. Like, she should be able to say, I don't want to see tweets from Republicans. And you know what I mean? Like, right, and if you are whatever, you know, the counterpart Republican, and you said, I don't want to see no tweets from no liberals, you should be able to not see tweets from Democrats. You know, from like, just from a pure user experience standpoint, I think that makes sense as like just a tactical policy to enable. Just like I think it makes sense to be able to say, hey, look, I don't want to see tweets from politicians. You know, there are people who go on Twitter who don't care about politics. They don't want to see the stuff on their timeline all the time.
Yeah. And then so going back to the article, just a lot of the stuff is self-explanatory, you know, banning nudity. And even if it's non-nude, if it's just sexual content in nature, then I definitely understand that. And then with violent content, anything that has to do with like death, gang shootings, or anything that's going on in Ukraine and Russia right now, then definitely understand that. So I think like this part is very self-explanatory. I mean, there's really no explanation here. I mean, you pretty much just say it right there in one paragraph. It's simple enough. And then I think the funniest part is, well, if you have, you know, you can, if you don't want to see anyone with a Ukraine flag or a rose petal or whatever else, any type of emoji in their name, you can just hide that. That's great. That's, you know, again, self-explanatory. That's funny. So I guess to also talk about, because we're talking about podcasting, one of the things you had mentioned here, and again, you can read this over at nblockpress.com, and you can read it for yourself. It like I said, it's a great article, so definitely check it out. So the part that I wanted to also kind of have a little bit of a deep dive was the whole, when you're talking about how Twitter, Twitter's natural evolution, as this header is for this particular part of the article, where Twitter and podcasting should go hand in hand. So can you talk about that a little bit and how you came to that conclusion?
Yeah. So I've seen a lot of people say, you know, Twitter should get more into video. You know, video is the future of things, and this is what gets the most engagement, so on and so forth. And Musk himself was talking about, you know, 4,000 character tweets and, you know, just integrating, you know, long form writing and things like this. And I think, like, this is the right... it's the right idea. It's the right like gut instinct to say, okay, we need to evolve this somehow. But I think those are kind of bullshit answers because like, well, think of it this way, like, you know, Henry Ford, if he had just said, well, hey, I think we should invent a horse carriage that had 10 horses on it instead of two. no one would know the guy's name. But instead he said, you know, I like this idea of some type of, you know, something generating force to move cargo. But I think we could evolve this into the automobile. You know, that was obviously the better call, right? So YouTube already does videos. You're not going to do better than YouTube, right? Like the YouTube is already, they're owned by Google. Or Alphabet. So Twitter is privately held, and Elon Musk has a lot of money, but you know, you don't want to go head to head against Google, right? Like, how much money do you think Google would spend to protect YouTube? Yeah. An unlimited amount of money, right? So
yeah, and also sorry to cut you off, but like when you share a YouTube link onto Twitter, it doesn't do very well on Twitter. So like Twitter needs to have its own type of thing, like its own video platform thing.
yeah, if it were to have one at all, like it should continue. You should be able to paste, you know, videos into Twitter, and you know, a lot of people watch videos on Twitter, but it's always short, right? Mm-hmm. Like you watch like a 20-second clip, like a gorilla throwing a banana or something, and everybody like, yeah, you know, return to monkey, haha, like you know, it's short, it's fine that it can be embedded. I'm not saying that the technology itself should be like that Twitter should divest itself from being able to handle video files, but the idea that you would build up Twitter to be some type of video platform is, to me, to miss the point of Twitter. Like, the initial concept was brevity, right? It's a micro blogging platform. It was specifically designed so that you could see little tweets from all your friends, right?
Yeah.
People passing thoughts, you know, initial responses to things, you know, whatever. This goes back to that people watching thing, right? Like, so to go into that analogy a little bit, you know, there's different parts of Twitter, right? There's Black Twitter, there's sports Twitter, there's finance Twitter, there's politics Twitter. There's all this different stuff, right? So think of this as like, you know, if you go downtown and you're sitting out on the patio with some of your friends after work, and you're all having a few beers, getting dinner, and just kind of commenting on the people walking by, you know, you're not there to hear like somebody's speech. You're here to just kind of, you know, evolve the moments quickly, right? So the idea that you would integrate like, I don't know, a 30-minute how-to video or something like that, like YouTube type content onto Twitter, I think misses the point, because it's like, look, man, I don't open the timeline so that I can see a 30-minute video. You know what I mean? Or yeah, be fed a suggestion based on an algorithm. You know what I mean? Like, if I want to do that, I just open my YouTube app and I watch a 30-minute video there. So, you know, there's already apps for all this other stuff. Everyone who says, oh, we should do this, we should do this, we should do this. These almost always people are referencing an already mature product that exists at a high level by a huge corporation, right? So there's no point in picking a fight with a company that is doing something better than you're going to be able to do it already and has enough money to rival your efforts. That, like, you're just putting yourself in a weak position rather than moving into something that other people are not doing. And right now, there is not a native way to kind of take podcasts and the Twitter timeline, tweets, and merge that into one experience, right? There's not, like, if you go to YouTube and you watch a video and you, I don't know, say you think of a joke, you post it in the comments, that's it. It's just, you know, it doesn't go anywhere from there, right? You don't, there's almost no reason to do that. Like, the fact that people comment on YouTube videos to me is unimaginable, to be honest. So, you know, it goes nowhere because it has nowhere to go, because there's no timeline, there's no like mutual, there's no followers, there's no group chat, all this type of stuff on YouTube. And you, other apps have like a slightly, you know, more mature offering in that regard. You know, Instagram, you might have like a chat or something, but you don't have the same type of timeline experience.
Yeah.
But basically nothing integrates podcasts, and Twitter is the home for podcasts, right? Like, anyone, especially, you know, political stuff, sports stuff. I mean, you've got most of the bigger independent, like, content creators have a large presence on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like big mainstream type podcasts. You've got, you know, Jocko has a big presence, Barstool Sports, all this kind of stuff. There's no way to like integrate that yet, right? Like, if you listen to a podcast, and if you guys, I mean, you guys listen to a bunch of podcasts, and a lot of the people listening to this, because it is a podcast, listen to a bunch of podcasts. Like, you know, it would be nice if you were listening to a podcast and you liked part of it, or you disagreed with part of it, or you thought part of it was funny, for that to be a native part of Twitter, right? Like if you could somehow integrate a podcast player, recording platform, all this type of thing, think about Zencaster, StreamYard, or, you know, whatever, integrated with like a podcatcher app, like Spotify or, like Overcast or, you know, Apple Podcasts, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think you would do really well, right? Like if you could open the Twitter app, swipe over to the right, and it was like, boom, there's your favorite podcast player. And when you when you comment on a podcast, if there's some way for that to be integrated with the timeline, this would make sense, right? Because, you know, that's like, I think that's the natural evolution of how these things go, or how it should go. I think this is what a lot of people probably, you know, would enjoy being able to do with a podcast. And I think that the market for long form video is already done by YouTube, and that's going to be a heavily guarded market. Then you've got TikTok that does and Snap that both do short form, but you know, Snap is you know, declined significantly since TikTok you know, has risen to prominence. But there's still no solution for podcasting. So if your goal is to, like, if you're the CEO and your goal is to grow the platform and integrate two things that people already like, two things that Twitter users specifically already like, which is, you know, tweeting shit takes and listening to podcasts, you have to find a way to like merge those, right? So that's the difference, I think, between just adding more horses to a horse cart and saying you've invented something and actually evolving it into an automobile.
Yeah, that's why platforms like MySpace died. Or is pretty much dead, and Facebook is dying. And so, yeah, like if Twitter would continue to evolve, then it would just continue to grow. Cause I mean, it's pretty much the number one, or definitely like top three social media platform in the world. And your idea about the pot, you know, the swipe to the right and there's your favorite podcast platform, whatever. I think it would probably be a good way too for that kind of feedback, that podcast. It would be more instant feedback, because a lot of people are on Twitter as opposed to, oh, now I gotta go on Apple Podcasts and I gotta comment and I gotta go to Spotify and do all this. You can just go to Twitter, and if it's Spotify or if it's Overcast, like you were saying, you can just boom, hit the star and comment, like, yeah, this is a great episode, I really liked it. It'd be so much easier because you're it's like a one-stop shop basically.
Right. And you would have to integrate, you know, like paid stuff, right? Like Patreon. I don't know if I've ever left a comment on a Patreon podcast. Like if I have something to say, I just go to their Twitter and post a reply on the episode. You know what I mean? This is not, it's not something that, like, it's a giant pain in the ass basically.
Cause you gotta go to these different places, and okay, I gotta go here and I gotta go there. You just go on Twitter and it's right there.
Right. And I think it would lead to increased conversions if you're an independent content creator, right? Like if you're a podcaster and you can just release directly to Twitter and people can just tap like subscribe to your podcast, and that's how you get paid, instead of them having to jump to, you know, Patreon, make a Patreon account, plug in their credit card information, get their RSS link, paste it into their app. Like you lose a lot of people in that process. There are a lot of people who don't know how to do this, like especially boomers and people like that. Mm-hmm. So if you could just, oh, hey, look, I like this podcast. You know, they have a free preview on their website. It's like the posted tweet or whatever. You know, looks good. I'm going to hit subscribe. It's going to ask me for my Apple ID or whatever. And I just put my thumbprint on it and boom, now I get this podcast. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would be, I think, that would be the best way to enhance Twitter, I think, right now. And especially because Twitter has a little bit of steam in this regard going for it through Spaces.
Yeah.
Like Twitter kind of has a beachhead on this already, where Spaces is still relatively primitive. But it's pretty active, right? Like I don't know if you guys ever really get on Spaces, but there's a pretty good community in a lot of niche areas where, whether it's like politics or philosophy or just people bullshitting, especially when there's big news, like current events that goes off. I mean, so there's big spaces with prominent people. I mean, you can get into a space and there might be a US rep or, you know, somebody like that in there where you can interact in that way. So Twitter's kind of on the right track with it, but I don't think they've necessarily put like two and two together on this, on what the next evolution on this should be.
Yeah, like Twitter space is pretty much like when Clubhouse was around, Twitter was like, oh yeah, well, how about spaces? Now who the fuck uses Clubhouse anymore?
Well, right, exactly. And that's, you know, I think they should build off of that and spaces. There's obviously a lot they could do with spaces too. I mean, they should definitely keep spaces as a concept, and they should improve it. They should improve the audio quality. They should make it work for desktop. You know what I mean? Because right now it's limited to mobile.
Yeah.
So the audio is inherently limited. But if you have, if you open that to desktop or something, you know, that way you can get actual podcasters and stuff in there. There's just a lot you could do. And I think they've been planning, or maybe they rolled it out early stage or something, but you know, selling tickets like spaces or that type of thing makes sense too. There's just a lot of ways you could grow spaces, but you know, my main contention is that they should keep up the momentum with that, but they should also find a way to integrate this with podcasts into kind of like one space. And that would be, I think, an incredibly effective move for Twitter to make, and would probably assure relevance for at least another couple of years.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we'll go ahead and end it there. But I think Twitter has a long way to go still. And I think we need to let Elon Musk know about your ideas, and maybe he'll implement them. It'd be kind of cool. But, oh yeah, I got it from this guy. That's pretty, that'd be pretty cool. He can credit you. Maybe he'll pay you a nice lump sum of cash.
Yeah, that'd be it. I mean, I'm open to that, Elon. So,
Elon, if you're listening,
yeah, I'll make sure to tag him in this so that he can possibly see it. You know, the one iota possibility.
That would be so crazy if you responded.
I know, right? I mean, I see him.
He does randomly respond to people.
So. That is true. But anyway, thanks again, Leaf, for coming on and kind of giving us a little detail on this article here. And again, for those just listening, the article is called "Here's What I Would Do as CEO of Twitter and Why Many People Are Wrong." Lee, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.